Thank you. I hadn't seen that. I just got up here and you started laughing. Okay, so the great thing about knowing you're made in God's image and you're never separate from God is that you have a hotline to the divine. You can receive guidance anytime. And whether you imagine that it's coming from God or Jesus, from angels or spirit guides, from your own intuition, even from something you read or a comment someone makes to you, the messages to steer you along life's path are always available. And I imagine most of you are tuned into them most of the time. But have you ever received guidance you just wanted to ignore? I mean, you know what to do, you just don't want to do it. It's not an unusual reaction. I have felt cosmically pushed into doing a number of things I didn't want to do at first. I've been saying all year, pay attention to what you do want. Your desires are a clear form of guidance for you. Desire is your inner voice speaking to you. But sometimes you hear the inner voice before the desire arrives. And it says, change jobs, take a job, leave a relationship, move to another city, let go of everything familiar and just step off a cliff. And sometimes you want to go, la, 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 la. The Bible is full of stories of people who actually did that. They hid from guidance. The most famous is Jonah. We've talked about him before, so just briefly. He was told to go preach in the city of Nineveh, and he headed the other way. He boarded a ship sailing the other way. And during a big storm, he admitted to the crew that, yes, he was running away from God, and the crew threw him overboard. He was swallowed by a giant fish, we call it a whale. And he spent 3 days in the belly of the fish before he was spit up onto land. And finally, Jonah went to preach in Nineveh. That wasn't the end of the story. People forget the end of the story, which is my favorite part. Jonah warned the people of Nineveh that they were wicked and God was going to smite them. But in the end, God forgave them. And Jonah was furious. After all he'd been through, he followed his calling. Anyway, the story ends with Jonah, the reluctant preacher, pouting under a tree. I love the Jonah story. And maybe we've all carried out some of our callings like that. But that story seems to me, at least on the surface, to be about obedience. Do what God says or you'll end up in the belly of a whale. You know, you'll end up in a deep, dark, unpleasant place. And that is the theme of the Old Testament. Disobey God and you are cursed. So today instead, I want to use stories about Elijah, one of the Old Testament prophets, because Elijah was not a putz like Jonah. He was a big-time, well-respected prophet who was strongly connected to God and was considered a precursor to the Messiah. Centuries later, the people around Jesus thought maybe Jesus was Elijah reincarnated. That's how impressive Elijah had been. To this day, Jews at Passover pour a cup of wine for Elijah and open the door to invite him in. But even Elijah hid from guidance. He was also hiding from Jezebel, and we'll get to that. But first, let me tell you a couple of stories about Elijah just to illustrate his strength and divine connection. And remember, they're not literal. They're stories. They're not reports. They illustrate his divine connection like an impressionist painting. We actually don't know anything about Elijah's background. He just shows up in 1 Kings chapter 17 as a prophet. He was part of a band of prophets who went into a trance-like state to speak for God. Today we might call it channeling, like John's visions in the book of Revelation or Muhammad's trances when he spoke the words of the Quran. The job of an Old Testament prophet was not to tell the future, but to announce God's will. Prophets have a bad reputation for predicting doom and gloom, but what they actually did was take a snapshot of the people as they were currently living, pass on God's instructions that those people ought to change, and warn them where the path would lead if they didn't change. So it wasn't a clairvoyant view of the future. The important part was to relay God's will now. And Elijah took it a step further with signs and miracles. He raised a little boy from the dead. He parted the waters of the Jordan River. The king of Israel at the time was Ahab, the worst king ever. All the kings of Israel were bad, but the Bible says Ahab did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. Worst king ever. And Ahab did not like hearing what Elijah had to say when it conflicted with what Ahab wanted to do. Ahab's wife, Jezebel, did not believe in Elijah's God. She was a Baal priestess, B-A-A-L. Baal was a Phoenician god, a pagan god. He represented fertility with children and crops. Sometimes Baal still required human sacrifice. The Baal priests prayed to Baal with loud, ecstatic cries and self-inflicted injury. They cut themselves. Baal worship was at its peak in Israel at this time. And the way the story has been passed down to us, God used Elijah in his final showdown with the pagans. So, one day, Elijah calls the Baal priests to the top of Mount Carmel to prove, my God's bigger than your God. And everyone's there. King Ahab is there. 850 priests of Baal and Asherah, the moon goddess. And Elijah tells them, here's how the contest goes, slaughter a bull and prepare an altar for animal sacrifice. Get kindling and wood and lay the fire, but don't light it. Let's see your God set it on fire. Pray to Baal. So the Baal priests set up the wood for the fire, and they went into their rituals and wailing and tearing their clothes. And this goes on for hours, and Elijah's just standing there watching them, saying, nothing from your God yet? He says, surely he is a God. Either he's meditating, or he's wandered away, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep and must be awakened. So the priests cried aloud, and as was their custom, they cut themselves with swords and lances until the blood gushed out over them. As midday passed, they raved on, but there was no voice, no answer, and no response. So finally, it's Elijah's turn. He lays a fire and then digs a trench around it and fills the trench with water, soaks the firewood and the altar. Everything is just drenched. And then he speaks one prayer in a loud voice, and boom, the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering, the wood, the stones, and the dust, and even licked up the water that was in the trench. When all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, the Lord indeed is God, the Lord indeed is God. So, having made his point, Elijah killed all the priests. 850 of them, apparently by himself. This was the Old Testament. You could claim your God was the true God and kill anyone who believed otherwise. Thank goodness no one does that anymore. So King Ahab witnessed all this, and Elijah wasn't finished. He tells Ahab, you need to get home because a deluge is coming. Now, Israel had been in drought for more than 3 years. This was part of God's punishment. But now God was ready to end the drought. So Elijah starts praying, and he sends a servant up on the ridge to check for possible rain. Servant comes back and says, nothing but sunshine and clear blue skies. So Elijah keeps praying, sends the servant back to the ridge. Nothing. Servant keeps coming. Back and forth they go 7 times. And on the 7th time, the servant says, you know, there's just this tiny little puff of cloud on the horizon. And Elijah knows it is done. And the wind picks up and the clouds roll in and the deluge pours. Now, this is a lesson in the law. We just finished a series on the spiritual principles of abundance, and this is how they work. Elijah visualized rain. He believed it would rain. He took the smallest piece of evidence and made the claim, this is happening. He kept an open mind for blessings even when he couldn't see them. No one could see them, and no one believed him. King Ahab rode home in the rain on horseback and told his wife Jezebel that Elijah had killed all the pagan priests. Jezebel sent a messenger back to Elijah and said, "You're a dead man." Elijah knew she was serious. She was the queen. She could send troops after him. She already had killed prophets before him. Her followers had torn down altars to Yahweh. Elijah was scared. Despite his faith and divine connection, he didn't want to face this. So he hid. He just started walking. He walked for a full day into the wilderness and finally sat down under a broom tree and asked to die. He told God, "Look, I've done what I can do here. Just beam me up." I'm paraphrasing. But instead, an angel started bringing food to Elijah, and Elijah gained strength for another 40 days. So he went to Mount Horeb, a sacred mountain, and what happened there might be familiar to you. At that place, he came to a cave and spent the night there. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He answered, "I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they're seeking my life to take it away." So the voice of guidance said to him, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. The sound of sheer silence. The King James Version translates it, "still small voice." And this is where we might recognize ourselves. Elijah tried to escape his commitment to God. He was in genuine danger, but he also had a divine calling. And haven't we all been in circumstances we thought were dire enough to flee? Sometimes pursuing your calling or your dream stirs up people around you, makes them want to kill you, makes you want to quit. Sometimes the obstacles seem overwhelming. But you can't hide from God. Wherever we are, God is. Not just because the earth is saturated with the creative energy of love and intelligence that we call God, but because we humans are part of that energy. We are the power of God expressing on earth. We affirm it at the end of every service. I am the power of God. This verse doesn't actually say God spoke to Elijah. It says the word of the Lord came to him. It's within us. The Lord, the divine, is in us. Elijah was hiding in a cave of denial and avoidance, but he couldn't escape his own Christ nature. And his inner wisdom asked him, "What are you doing here?" Has that ever happened to you? You think you've reached a safe and comfortable place in life, but the voice within says, "What are you doing here?" Another way to ask that question when you're hiding from guidance is, what are you pretending not to know? Elijah goes through all his good reasons for hiding, But his higher self is not impressed. Go out, stand on the mountain, for the Lord is about to pass by. Get up, get back out there, let the power of God express in your life. And at first there's a lot of drama. Wind, earthquake, fire, what we might expect the presence of God to feel like. But we're told God is not in those manifestations. What we think will happen, what we imagine life to be like, drama, trauma, that's not how we connect with the divine. It's silence, sheer silence. Unity's co-founder Charles Fillmore talked about entering the silence as the ultimate goal of prayer. It's oneness with the universe. It's not a conversation. It's not a relationship with God. It's not speaking or listening. It's not asking or receiving. It's just being within the one mind. Not easy for most people to enter that state, especially when we're scared, as Elijah was. And dramas like wind and fire, those are our fears, resentments, confusion, conflicts, all the distractions of human life. But the still small voice is always available. You might have to go deep within to hear it. It is the voice of the Christ presence that is your true identity, the divine in you. It offers love and guidance. In this presence, there's no reason to hide, nothing to fear. We practice sitting in silence or connecting with the inner voice, so we'll be able to do it even with drama raging around us. God did not tell Elijah to go back and face Jezebel, although later Elijah prophesied her death. The dogs will lick up your blood, he said. And sure enough, eventually she was thrown out of a window by her servants. But up here on Mount Horeb in the sheer silence, God told Elijah to go to Damascus where he would meet a young man named Elisha. God gave him a protege. Elisha was first a partner and became Elijah's successor. Elisha inherited a double portion of Elijah's spirit. And Elijah didn't really die. A chariot of fire and horses of fire took Elijah up into a whirlwind and he ascended to heaven. And Elisha, the young successor, parted the waters of the Jordan River again and went back to continue their work. He did what we all do. He learned all he could from his spiritual master, and then he added his own ideas and applied it in his own life to his own calling. We walk that same line between tradition and exploration. Isn't it good to know we can be guided with each step? I am willing to listen to the still, small voice in me. So let's take these thoughts into meditation. Okay. We practice entering the silence, because that is where we encounter the divine in us. It's so easy to be distracted by drama and sickness and money and all those parts of human life that we focus on so often. But always within, that still small voice is waiting to be heard, waiting for each of us to be willing to listen. It guides us through good times and bad. It guides us whether we believe it or trust it or not. We are free to argue. We are free to do something different. But we cannot escape that Christ presence in us, the divine in you, will never leave you alone. will never forsake you and will never fall asleep. And so for just a moment, be still and listen to the sound of silence. It is in this consciousness of silent openness and willingness that we are most likely to hear the still small voice within. We are grateful in advance for its guidance, protection, and steadfastness. And so it is. Amen. Thank you.